Welcome to Heavy Networking, the flagship podcast from the Packet Pushers network of fine podcasts, blogs, newsletters, videos, and more, all for your professional career development. I'm Ethan Banks, and with me is my intrepid co-host with the Hollywood hair, Drew Conray Murray, and you can follow or connect with us on LinkedIn, and please do. On today's episode, 800 gig Ethernet with sponsor Juniper Networks. Yeah, we're there. 800 gig. It seems like I was making jokes about terabit Ethernet not all that long ago, and we're actually almost at that point. So if you are awestruck by the sheer size of an 800 gig pipe, and I think we all are kind of awestruck on some level, you might be wondering what you'd actually do with all that bandwidth. Well, Juniper has been working with their customers on 800 gig deployments, and they have answers to that question. The 800 gig use cases start in the data center and work outward from there. Joining us from Juniper Networks are Amit Bardwaj, VP of Product Management for the Juniper Automated WAN, and Dmitry Shakarev, Principal PLM. And to kick off our conversation, we're going to discuss why 800 gig and how we get there. And then we're going to dive into the Juniper PTX line of fixed configuration and chassis routers that give you lots of 800 gig ports in a variety of form factors. Amit, welcome to the show. And this first question goes to you. And this is the why question. I want to start with why we need 800 gig. What are the major use cases?
You know, today, data is the new oil. I mean, the world is hungry for data. And we to go back 3 years, 400 gig crossed the chasm when COVID started. And now we are in the AI era, and the AI applications are even more data hungry. So what's that doing is, first, the data centers itself are driving more and more bandwidth because there's so much data that needs to be exchanged between the workloads in the data centers. The next, what that drives is that the traffic between the data centers is growing gigantically because these workloads need a lot of data. And that's also driving the growth in the core networks and the aggregation networks, because all that data has to come from the end user devices and enterprises devices to the data centers, right? So this is basically a new data economy in the AI era. And one example I would give it is that, you know, I drive my Tesla in the morning, they are collecting a billion miles of data probably every 2 or 3 months, and everybody's doing it.
Now, you mentioned the 800 gig in the data center to transport data between like AI compute nodes and so on. That we've heard that story, just how much you can't have enough bandwidth, it seems like. So 800 gig there. But then also 800 gig trying to get data into the data center. Is it fair to say that if we don't have 800 gig coming into the data center, that we end up with a bottleneck?
Yes. The problem is you can't drive enough power to these data centers. So any technology that saves power and makes things more sustainable allows you to do more in that data center itself. So yes, without 800 gig, data centers will not be sustainable with all the growth and the traffic.
So can you kind of explain that? Because I'm assuming if I'm doubling my throughput, my energy consumption is going up.
And yes and no, because the watts per gig from every technology has always gone down. As we went from 100 gig to 400 gig, we probably saw a 50% reduction. As we go from 400 gig to 800 gig, we're going to see another 50% reduction in watts per gig. In fact, when we package the equipment together, in some cases, we're seeing 70% reductions in watts per gig as compared to the previous generation.
Yeah, in other words, the power consumption is the same, even though I'm getting much more bandwidth for my power.
Exactly. Yeah.
But does this mean if I'm contemplating bringing 800 gig into my data center, should I be thinking about a power upgrade in that DC?
There is some power upgrade that's going to be required because you're just trying to do more and more. Mm-hmm. But if we didn't do 800 gig, the power upgrade required will be gigantic. So this at least makes it more sustainable in terms of what the upgrades are required.
All right, Amit, so if I've got the need for 800 gig, I've got a use case, how do I get there? Am I going to need to lay new fiber? Always a big question. We've been talking about the power requirement. This is, we kind of have our clue there, but I mean, more fiber, other requirements to prepare my data center so that I can get 800 gig running.
There's plenty of fiber in most of these places. I think the fiber is not being the bottleneck, although I think new fiber always keeps getting deployed, especially to the last mile to the homes. But in these high bandwidth areas, there is plenty of fiber. There's always the question of like, how do you light up that fiber? And 800 gig brings another capability. It's not just doing 800 gig short reach, you know, kind of interfaces. It also brings DWDM to the table in a way that hasn't been done before. Because in 400 gig generation, we brought DWDM, but 400 gig DWDM allows us to go metro distances. The 800 gig DWDM allows us to go regional as well as long haul distances.
So whatever my fiber plant is, if I was able to support 400 gig, that's also going to support 800 gig. There's nothing, I don't need to upgrade the glass quality to get 800 gig, you're saying?
Absolutely, yes. You don't have to do that. And you can do 400 gig and 800 gig at the same time on the same pair of fiber.
So what's my transition plan then? How do I keep supporting what I've already got? You know, you've mentioned, it sounds like some of that's already going to be in place, but give me some more thoughts on that, Amit.
The transition plan. So let's dive into what does 800 gig bring to the table? I think there is a lot of people, everybody thinks 800 gig is 800 gig only. And then the answer is far away from it. So 800 gig, first of all, does 800 gig, right? And then 800 gig also does DWDM better from a 400 as compared to 400 gig. No doubts about that. 800 gig also increases the density for 400 gig because every 800 gig port allows you to do 2x400 gig with discrete LC connectors, not breakouts, with discrete LC connectors. So you double the density of the 400 gig at the same power almost that you had before. And then the last is also it brings higher density, 800 gig, because every 800 gig port can do 8x100 gig. So to your question on the transition, now you have a magical port that can do all these things, and you can decide what your needs are at that given location. You can do 100 gig, 400 gig, 800 gig, DWDM, everything on that. The key question is that when you do not all 800 gig is the same. A lot of people are out there saying 800 gig, but they don't have all these flexibility at every port. So it's important that when you do 800 gig, that every port on the router is capable of doing all these different combinations without any limitations.
And are those combos available per port? Can I mix and match? So some of my ports are just going full 800. Some of my ports I'm using for double 2 400s or 8 100s.
Every port can do any combination, irrespective of other port on the device. That's how we designed our silicon and the products. Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on the form factor of that port? I don't run 800 gig or 400 gig anywhere in any of the networks that I'm dealing with. So you said 800 gig would have two discrete LC connectors with 400 gig. So what's the form factor for that? Is that those pluggable modules? Is there a special kind of module, like a carrier to enable that?
Yeah, it's a pluggable module. So every port is a pluggable module. And depending on the pluggable module you put on that port, you can decide the personality of that port, basically. It sounds magical, okay. But basically it's every port you decide the personality you want to put on that port.
So when I build the switch or build the line card, as the case may be, and I pick my optics, it's just, I pick the module I want to insert in there. And if it could be 2x400, it could be one of the modules I select.
Correct. It could be 2x400, could be 1x800, could be 8x100. It also could do actually 10 gigs, but I don't know if you want to do 10 gigs on an 800 gig port, but you could do that.
Well, actually, what would that be? Is that like a massive breakout cable?
It doesn't give you all the density. It does give you 4x10 gig, but sometimes, you know, okay. Customers have need for 110 gigs. So because of some legacy reason, so you do it.
So you end up burning the bandwidth on that one port just because you need the 10 on that. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, let's start talking about the Juniper PTX router line that can handle the 800 gig. You've got, this is the PTX is the packet transport router family. There's a bunch of different chassis. There's some fixed configs. Give us the overview of this this router family, Amit.
Okay. So first of all, let me talk about what is PTX. So PTX is our Juniper's largest router, which is focused on core networks, peering networks, data center spines, DCI networks, as well as aggregations. We talk about all these hyperscale use cases, right? Now, when you build these hyperscale networks, the most important thing is the radix. And the magical number for the radix is 36, because that's the real estate limitation typically on a line card. In today's generation?
The radix you're talking about there, that's the number of ports I get per ASIC, yeah?
That's the great question. First of all, that's the number of ports that you get on the faceplate on a line card. Okay,
Okay.
that's the outcome you want. Now, how you design the silicon is important based on that, because if the radix is 36, then your silicon, the best silicon you can design is silicon that does 36 ports of 800 gig, right? Not less, not more. And that's exactly our Express 5 silicon is. It does 36 ports of 800 gig, which my colleague Dimitri is the expert on. He can talk about this when he gets a chance. But that's what it is. So going back to the PTX routers, so we have fixed form factors, which is does 36 ports of 800 gig, perfect radix. We have chassis, which are 4-slot, 8-slot, and 16-slot chassis. Each slot has a line card that does 36 ports of 800 gig. And in those chassis, it's the same line card across 4-slot and 8-slot and 16-slot. And the beauty is that these 800 gig capable line cards are backwards compatible with the 400 gig generation. So you back to your original transition question, if you have a 400 gig line card, you can just insert a new 800 gig line card in the same chassis and they will interoperate.
Okay, so we've got a huge amount of density here available. So that's a good question. If I've got a 16 slot chassis and I slam that thing full of this line card that's got 36 800 gig ports, do I have 36 times 16 800 gig ports and I can run them all at full line rate?
Correct. You can run them all okay. full line rate. In fact, you can run them with all different combinations. For every port, you can decide the personality that you want on that port.
Okay. Can I also barbecue with that?
Yeah, exactly.
This is a great question. Like, you start to drive a lot of power as you start to build all these things. But the reality is the watts per gig power continues to go down from generation to generation. So overall, your power infrastructure upgrade is not that massive. In fact, in many of these cases, we can fill up almost 75% of the chassis without any power upgrade at all.
Okay. Of that 16-slot chassis?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Now, we talked about the optics that I can put in here, but one of the things we haven't talked about yet is that some of the optics are coherent optics. Now, we've talked a bit about coherent optics on packet pushes before, but would you remind us what coherent optics are all about, why we care about those as engineers?
Let's compare the before and after, right? We've been trying to do coherent underwriting for a long time. But the problem in the past was that whenever we tried to do coherent underwriters, we lost the density of the ports. But now we have coherent pluggables. Everything has been miniaturized. So we have coherent pluggables in the 400 gig generation where every 400 gig on the router can be DWDM optic, right? A lot of people had concerns, this is one generation only, may not happen in the 800 gig generation. Answer is wrong. Actually, 800 gig DWDM is even better than 400 gig because the 800 gig optics, coherent, what we call as 800 gig ZR optics, they can do 800 gig on every, allow us to do 800 gig DWDM on every port, but also you can trade speed with distance. You know what I mean? You can go metro distances like 500 kilometers at 800 gig speed, which is almost 80% of the network. And then if you want to go further, you can tune it down to 600 gig wavelength and go 1,000 kilometers. Or you can go at 400 gig to 2,000 kilometers. So basically with the same optic, you can build a metro, regional, and a long-haul network and never have to deploy any transponder at all.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. You said 2,000 kilometers with these optics I can get to?
Yes.
Wow. But that's, I'd step it down to 400 gig at that point.
Yeah, so you trade speed with distance, right, basically. Uh-huh. 500 to 2,000 kilometers. And depending on the distance, you can go 600 gig, 800 gig, or 400 gig.
But that's just router to router, no repeaters or anything in between.
There will be some no repeaters in between. That's correct. But you will have to do some amplification, but no regenerators, anything in between.
Okay. I mean, that's a pretty good trade-off to get 2000K.
Oh, absolutely. I think many customers are telling us that's the way to go. They want to fill up, in some cases, every port with a DWDM pluggable. in the router, because if you think about this, if you can do this, 80% of your links are point to point, and there's some places you have to do some add and drop, And many customers are saying, oh, I can even use a small form factor PTX 10002 instead of even doing a ROADM device, for example. It simplifies my operations a lot because I can do OEO in some places strategically and build this with just IP over DWDM.
So from a network management perspective, what does this look like? Like any WAN link as a network engineer, I'm just going to see two endpoints with coherent optic on either end and nothing in the middle?
It depends, right? So it depends what's in the middle because I don't want to simplify too much because for the point-to-point links, you will not see anything in the middle because that's majority of the links, right? So you see a router, you see a optic and some amplification in the middle, and that's it. If you have line systems which are more sophisticated, then you would have a line system in the middle, but at the endpoints, you would just have routers, no transponders.
So I get a simplified network pushing through these optics. I'm saving on some power and some complexity. I'm simplifying my network somewhat. What's the trade-off? Are they spendier, yeah. I suppose?
Let me quote the numbers. So we did a study on this. What does it save the customers by going this way? And the numbers are phenomenal because you see 54% savings in power, 77% savings in space, and 55% savings in the carbon footprint, right? When you get that kind of saving, you find a way to make it work, right? I mean, the problem is always organizational in these cases because the IP routing is done by the IP guys and the optical stuff is done by optical teams in the customers. So there are some organizational things to figure out, but the savings are so gigantic, the customers are already figuring out in the 400 gig generation. Going to 800 gig generation is going to be a lot more easier because they would have already figured out everything.
Well, let's move on to the silicon part of the discussion because that's another big piece of all of this that is making the 800 gig happen. Amit, you mentioned the Express 5 chip in passing here. And Dmitry, I guess this is your area of expertise. Can you give us the overview of the Express 5 silicon?
Well, so that's, in short, that's the largest deep buffer silicon on the planet at this point. 28.8 terabit capacity, 36 800 gig ports. We have multiple configurations of this chip, and we have one for fixed form factor and our own for line cards.
What did you have in mind when you were designing this chip? What was sort of the philosophy or the intent behind it?
Well, it's really about reaching some balance. So we want to support multiple applications in this chip. So that includes, like Amit mentioned, the AIML cluster deployments, data center interconnect, data center spine deployments, core peering, aggregation. But we also want to do it in a smart way. To give you an example, like the ASIC supports 16 million of IPv4 routes. That's an incredible number. By the time we all retire, that will probably be sufficient. But we do it in a smart way. So we use external memory to store those routes, and there is a fully hardware caching implementation to support that scale. We also use the same external memory for statistics collection. 8 million counters are stored in that external memory. The same memory is used for packet buffering. So it's in our case, it's multi-purpose. So that helps us to achieve that balance. So we really want to have a very balanced chip from cost, power perspective, and also feature set and scale.
So that deep buffer capability, was that sort of driven by AIML use cases, or you're anticipating AIML use cases?
Not really. So deep buffering is mostly needed in the wide area network deployment. This chip is good for in terms of AIML clusters is the large radix devices. Like that 16 slot device that we were just talking about, like a massive scale with huge number of ports in one single chassis, which has copper connectivity, which is like cheap, inexpensive, best you can get compared to some other, you know, bigger leaf and spine fabrics connected through optical interfaces.
Right, because you did mention we're calling this a router, but you are saying you could put this in as a spine in a leaf spine architecture for AIML.
Lines are blurring. It's a router. It's a big switch. So,
yeah, there's a value in that, right? When if you do a full glow fabric with just the smaller form factors, it's sometimes in the large designs it can go to 5-stage. But if you use this high radix like the 16 slot chassis, that reduces the glow fabric from 5-stage to 3-stage. So you completely eliminated the 1-stage. And when that happens, you eliminate a bunch of optics from the network. Guess what? Optics is probably a bigger cost than the routing in the networks. And the backplane interconnect on a chassis, which is copper, is the cheapest way to interconnect things. So that's the value of having a big Radix device in a data center.
Now, is it safe to assume that even in the 16 slot chassis, this is non-blocking? I can load this thing up with line cards, and it's a non-blocking fabric inside that chassis.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, we actually have some speed up to support internal overheads and so on. But yeah, it's fully in line rate.
Okay. And well, I guess that's where the deep buffers would come in, because occasionally you're going to have contention. It's just the way it's going to be. You're going to overcome that with buffers. So
yeah, correct.
Okay, this chip, Express 5, Dimitri, has a whole bunch of interesting features. There's line rate MACsec, scalable SRv6. Hit the highlights. Talk through these.
Depending on the segment, so we put certain features in. So, for example, for service providers, aggregation network, we have a hierarchical QoS support in that chip. Also, things that is relevant, very much relevant for, I would say, peering. So we have implemented hardware sampling capability. This is so-called inline IPFix support using information on element 315. We report the packet header with some metadata for DDoS systems to figure out whether attack is happening or not. And this is all at very high rate.
That's happening on the chip. Is that basically streaming telemetry, the IPFix records coming off that?
You can think of it as a streaming telemetry, but it was incepted long before streaming telemetry came to reality. I would call it, it's like parallel technique. So just reporting the flow information and reporting the packet content for analysis. It can be like DDoS attack detection or maybe peering agreement evaluation. So these sorts of things. And previously we were doing like some software assistance. Here it's fully inline. So hardware is streaming data or sampling data to the external destinations without any control plane involvement.
Because it's impossible to do it any other way at this point. The packet rates are just way too fast. They're flying by in nanoseconds at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And just to touch a few more points on other features. So we do see the huge interest in deployments of MACsec. So all the links are encrypted, especially in the hyperscaler environment. But also that propagates to the service provider environment. And we do have MACsec. So we re-architected our MACsec engine to support 800 gig line rate, 800 gig line rate. And another thing is SRv6, so it's picking up. So we see the demand. So we believe the best implementation ever. Like 48 microseeds can be imposed, can be processed in that device. It can go around the world several times, maybe from multiple hops with this capability.
So that the SRv6, that's all on the chip, you're saying?
The chip is able to parse it. It is able to impose the headers to route the packets through SRv6 capable nodes, and it is able to provide services using SRv6.
Okay. Back to more of a mundane one, hierarchical QoS, which you led with. Is that a big thing that service providers are still needing, even when we're pushing data around at 800 gig? QoS has a role?
It does have a role at the edge. If you do have certain SLAs with customers and you have many of them on a single device, then yes, you might want to segregate them, provide different quality of service for each customer.
Okay, so it's a certain SLA. It's enforcing that the customer is getting whatever that SLA of moments of congestion. And you said at the edge, which makes all the sense in the world, because if you can have a super fast core where you're really never dropping or hardly ever delaying anything, but at the edge, when you're stepping down to a lower speed, you can run into that speed mismatch that can cause those congestion problems where you need to start prioritizing things. So that adds up, yeah. So there's a lot in this chip, Dimitri. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Have you seen the picture of the chip?
I think I did, and it's big. It's a kind of a sizable thing.
Big, but if you look into that picture, you can see actually the one we are using in the PTX product, the fixed form factor device. It has two little dice in it, like twin dice, connected back to back, and that shows our new design approach. It's called chiplet-based design. We are the first vendor to bring it to networking. Why is it important to the customer? Normally, you shouldn't care. But like, then you look into this, you realize these dice are small dice. This makes a product sustainable. So when you mentioned that you don't have 800 gig device in your network, well, maybe that one you can actually deploy as 100 gig because it's affordable, it's sustainable. Smaller dies are less expensive to produce. We generate less waste in the production phase. So this is how we achieve sustainability with chip.
Yeah, if you see in the market, there's a recent announcement, the AI chips are based on chiplet technology and the HBM memory technology. Hmm. This Express 5 is exactly the same. We have chiplets and we have the memory, and we do smart packaging of this depending on what the form factor is. So on the same path as the AI technology, and I think the speed starts to move fast on the networking with this thing. We believe other guys will copy us too on this.
If I could just go back a second to some of the features on the chip, line rate, MACsec, scalable, SRv6, the inline IP fix. If I want a mix of those features, are there different SKUs? Like if I want the IP fix, I'd pick one kind of chip and the line rate MACsec another, or are all those features available on every chip?
Everything is baked in. That's actually another reason, another design principle we have. So we don't want to segregate. So it's one single SKU, and PTX router supports all of that.
So then I would essentially just activate those features through an SDK or something?
Oh, configuration. Router configuration. Some of them are licensed, but this is a software license. Mm. It's not a separate hardware SKU.
Okay. And last question on these features. If I want to run multiple of these features, like line rate, MACsec, SRv6, and so on, is that going to impact performance, or can I use all of these features at line rate?
Some of the packet processing features, they may reduce performance. Mm. So we have certain recommendations, like in what cases that may happen. But many of the features are orthogonal. So say MACsec is orthogonal to any other feature. You can enable it and it will still be line rate.
Okay, but maybe something like SRv6 might have an impact?
It may have impact if you process a very, very large header. Mm-hmm. The one I mentioned, 48 microseeds.
Mm. But that's not dependent. That's not the chip thing. That's basically how technology SRv6 is designed. Yeah. Because
yes,
headers can be large, and mm-hmm. that's inherently a part of the technology definition.
You mentioned something, Dimitri, about the chiplet form factor. We've got two chips back to back that make up the entire chip structure. That's cheaper, and I think you said something to the effect of you might be running 100 gig now, and you can actually go cheaper if you go to 800 gig. Is this something like that? Could you elaborate on that?
Well, so that's a point. So that product, we really want to make it affordable, and yeah, that's a 28.8 tera chip. So we started at 800 gig, but you can still use it for 400 gig. So we have a special mode of operation where we can clock it down to support 14.4 tera in the package. So, and it will operate at 400 gig, 36 ports only. But we can also go lower, and the structure, the cost structure we have allows us to go lower because of a design. Unlike the GPU vendors, where we have very big, gigantic chips sitting back to back in the package, the design is looking the same, but the dice are physically smaller. They're less expensive to produce. The yield is better.
As I was reading through all of Juniper's 800 gig literature, the different blog posts you guys have put out and so on, you're describing 800 gig as 800 gig done right. And then we were prepping for this show. You guys were kind of briefing us on the technology and so on. And you were saying that 800 gig is a better 400 gig. So what do you mean that it's done right and it's a better 400 gig?
First, there were fewer attempts to deliver 800 gig devices in the market. That one is the first one to support 800 gig at the right price point and density and capacity. So we firmly believe it. If you compare us to competition, that's the best one.
And the power.
Hmm.
And with no limitations.
Well, again, you say no limitations, as in all the different use cases and the different optics that I can put in and the different ways that I can deploy that 800 gig port, whether I don't even have to deploy it at 800 gig if I don't want to. I've got those options as well.
Yeah, I think you said it better than I could have said. But yeah, exactly what you said, 100% true.
Okay, just making sure I'm not missing something. That's the key there. Okay.
So once I've got this in place, are you doing things to support automation, telemetry, that kind of thing?
Well, definitely. So, and that's coming as part of our Junos software suite. So we have all the features you can imagine for a network element to expose information and accept configuration from external management systems. So that includes like open config support, the services such as JNMI, JRiby, and others. Also, we have our own Young models developed for expose some interesting data this platform has for, again, some fault performance monitoring purposes. And in addition to that, we also support our own Juniper applications that can actually manage that device. That's part of our Paragon automation suite. And also, we are integrating with third parties.
Now, you mentioned that you've got your own Yang models. I assume that means because there's some unique features either in the Express 5 silicon or in the 800 gig line cards or the switches that you're wanting to expose. I mean, OpenConfig models are kind of known for, it's the least common denominator. It's something that everybody supports. So you don't, so if there are special features in a piece of hardware, you don't see them in the OpenConfig model potentially. So I'm assuming it's something like that.
Yeah, correct. Now, I can give you a specific example related to optics. So for example, in 400 gig, when you use 400 gig and 800 gig, so we use forward error correction codes on all of those links. And it's actually good practice to monitor the counters, like how many corrected words you have had on a link and uncorrected ones. And surprisingly, that information is currently missing in OpenConfig models. So what we did, we created our own to expose this information to our customers right now. So, and of course, we will work with industry bodies to make it standardized, but, you know, it's not available today. So we expose it today with our own models.
Yeah, something like that would be really useful to know if you've got either a dirty link or an optic that's got some kind of a problem, something like that that's causing effect to kick in. And
You mentioned Paragon for automation, which is a Juniper product, and I sort of have that in my mental digest as a service provider oriented product. But you're also saying you're positioning this router to sit in a data center in a Clo fabric. So could I also then run this with Apstra?
Yes, correct. So you're exactly right. So that product is managed by Apstra in the data center environment.
Okay, because it's Junos essentially under the cover still.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Here's another operational question. Let's say I'm going to install this in a colo. I'm not going to go to the colo to install it. They're going to install it for me. So I'm going to ship this thing off. Other hands are going to put it in. How do I know that my Juniper PTX hasn't been tampered with? There's not something that's bad that's happened to it.
Okay. So, well, each device that we ship has a so-called TPM 2.0 chip, and that chip has the device identification built into it. At the moment, it leaves manufacturer facility, you cannot change it. And what it means, when the device arrives on site, you can authenticate it and ensure that this is your device, not someone else's device. And this is how we ensure that the network is not compromised.
So okay, just sort of a dramatic overstatement. It's essentially a cryptographic signature that says this firmware hasn't been tampered with, yeah? The TPM.
It starts with the device identification itself and also the firmware in it. You're right.
Okay.
And that's the important part in the security aspect, right? We can think about security in multiple different ways. Number one, is the device secure? So the TPM 2.0 chip where the information is burned in the factory makes the device secure. The second thing is the software secure, right? So that's where the secure boot capability comes into play. Mm-hmm. The third thing is, okay, once you deployed this, is my line secure? So that's where MACsec comes into play. So every bit that goes on the line is secure. Then you say, okay, the bits can come into the router, but what if there is somebody trying to do a DDoS attack? That's where the capability in the chip comes into play, where we can sample the packets to monitor them, and we can block this malicious attacks with PTX, not just using the five tuple approach, but also looking into the packet payload. So the DDoS attacks can be very, very, with high specificity blocked using the capabilities on the silicon. So this is a full 360 degree security approach where your hardware, software, line, and any traffic that comes in can be scrubbed properly and blocked from if there are DDoS attacks happening.
All right, guys, we've talked a lot about this technology, 800 gig, how it's deployed, what the use cases are. And I know you've got early customer deployments. They're working on this. They're qualifying 800 gig. What are the early reactions you're getting from people?
Oh, the customers are super excited about this. I think if some of you went to Mobile World Congress and OFC, you actually saw the product in the live demos. Currently, we have 50 plus customers qualifying the 800 gig solution. And you can go to our website and see public quotes from some of these customers in terms of how excited they are about going to 800 gig, primarily because the bandwidth continues to grow for all the use cases we talked about before, core, peering, data center, DCI, aggregation. They want to drive a better TCO model, both from cost, power, and sustainability standpoint. And I think we have long sustaining partnerships with these customers by really being ahead on the technology curve as we move from 100 gig to 400 gig and now in the 800 gig generation.
Now, if you're listening to this as a cynical engineer and going, yeah, customer quotes, I don't care. You actually do, and I'll tell you why. When customer quotes come through, that means that a customer agreed to make the quote and that legal departments approved the quote, and it went through this whole thing before it actually went on the public record. So there was some trouble that was gone to make that happen, meaning the quotes actually mean something. It came from someone who actually cared enough to get that quote out there in the public light. But one more question I've got for the Juniper team, and that is, okay, so we've made this transition here, 100, 400, 800. Did we learn enough going from 400 to 800 that we know what's next? What's after 800? Do we know how we're going to make the next leap?
Yeah, Dmitry and I have worked on this very closely with our silicon teams and the system teams and the software teams. The next step is going to be 1.6T. After 800 gig. Okay. We are already working on this. We're already defining things for 1.6T generation. And some of the things that we're building will be what we learned in the 800 gig generation. We're going to incorporate some of this in 1.6T and even better. But that might be for another podcast in the future.
Okay. 1.6T coming next. You heard it here first. Wow. Okay. What's the timeline on that? Are we talking probably 3-ish years, something like that?
We can speculate. Around that time frame.
Something like that. Okay. Good. No, it's not next week for sure. It's going to be a ways. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. Because the whole ecosystem has to be developed for 1.6T. We're doing the silicon, the system, and the optics also have to be developed and matured, and the cost curves have to come where it makes sense. So, let's say it's about 3 years.
Ethan, can you be satisfied with 800 gig for a few minutes before we move on to 1.6?
I guess it's enough. Yeah. Right.
That's my expectations.
All right. So if folks want to know more about this solution from Juniper, all about 800 gig, where would you send them, Amit?
Go to www.juniper.net. You can also go to the PTX page there. A lot of information. Our teams are posting many tech posts, which many customers loving, which talk about all the things we talked today, but in a lot more detail. So for example, SRV6, Circle QoS, the flexible filters, all this stuff is talked in detail into the text post. So you could go there and learn a lot more about the technology and the product.
Again, that's juniper.net. There is a 400 gig, 800 gig landing page. There's a PTX landing page. And as Amit just said, lots of other links into it. Really go as deep as you want to go. So if you're an engineer, you're trying to design a solution and you need specific details on what the hardware can and can't do and what the trade-offs are in certain modes and all the rest of those things that you need to figure out, you can do that at juniper.net. All that information is public and very well done. I've read lots and lots of it over the years as I've researched different products and technologies. So thank you for listening to today's Heavy Networking, and thanks to Juniper Networks for sponsoring today's episode. Great sponsors like Juniper are how the Packet Pushers bring you great engineering content week after week. And if you ring up Juniper to investigate their 800 gig offerings or the PTX router line, let them know you heard about it on Packet Pushers. And if you'd like even more Packet Pushers in your ears, check out our entire lineup of shows by searching for Packet Pushers in your podcast app. Everything that we are running will appear, each and every episode designed to make you a bit better at your job. You can also join me, Ethan Banks, and Drew Conroy Murray in the community Slack channel at packetpushers.net/community. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.